that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry. Anything, anything can go.
Another host in another show.
Welcome to your weekend. This is Weekend Showcase, your North State Arts Magazine. I'm Tom Kinney. A new theater company has just been created in Reading. It's called Axiom Repertory Theater. Today we talk with the producer artistic director in charge of this new troupe, Ken Hill, who has ambitious goals for the future of this theater company.
In the years to come, we intend to move forward and do contemporary works, works which are a challenge not only to us, but also to our constituency. We can develop not only the finest talent that exists here, but we can also attract talent from perhaps around the world.
Some unusual pictures at an exhibition that opens Monday at Chico State's University Art Gallery. The exhibit features works by San Francisco artist Cara Maria. Her paintings combine colorful, explosive abstractions with realistic animals and objects, such as a rhinoceros and military vehicles, often with a political message in mind. Our visual art expert, Dolores Mitchell, talks with the artist who will be discussing her artistic process.
You do something, and then you look at it for a while, and then you, like, do something else, and then you look at it for a while, and you do something else, until the painting feels like it's complete to you.
That's coming up over the next half hour here on Weekend Showcase. Stay tuned. First, here's Brian Maul with the North State Arts Calendar.
Reading's Riverfront Playhouse presents the Tony-winning comedy that puts a contemporary spin on Chekhov, Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. Showtimes are 7:30 tonight and tomorrow and Sunday afternoon at 2. At the Dave Marr Theater, Reading School of the Arts ends its run of The Lion King. This production has all the award-winning music of the Broadway perennial. Curtain goes up tonight at 7 o'clock and twice tomorrow, 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock. Tonight at Reading's Cascade Theater, Caravan of Thieves, an eclectic jazz swing band playing 1930s tunes and hits from greats like Duke Ellington, George Gershwin, and Bing Crosby. Enjoy jazz with a touch of vaudeville starting at 7:30. Comic opera is on stage at Shasta College with The Bartered Bride. Can true love prevail in spite of the efforts of ambitious parents and a scheming marriage broker? Find out at the Shasta College Theater. Tonight and tomorrow, the curtain goes up at 7 o'clock. There's also a performance at 3 o'clock on Sunday. The Orland Art Center exhibit, New Life for a New Year, closes tomorrow. Six artists depict the vulnerability and beauty of baby animals. You can see this exhibit today till 6 or tomorrow between 1 and 6. At the Chico Theater Company, the musical comedy Thoroughly Modern Millie, a high-spirited romp set in the roaring 1920s. See it tonight or tomorrow starting at 7:30 or Sunday starting at 2. This weekend, Chico's Blue Room Theater ends its production Detroit, a comedy drama about suburbanites dealing with the economic collapse of 2008. Only two more performances, tonight and tomorrow at 7:30. Tonight, California Regional Theater opens its latest production, Rodgers and Hammerstein's classic, The Sound of Music. The hills are alive, and so is Chico Center for the Arts, tonight and tomorrow starting at 7:30, or Sunday at 2. The venue is on the edge of the Pleasant Valley High campus. Monday, at Sierra Nevada's Big Room, it's Mark Hummel's 25th anniversary blues harp blowout, featuring guitar masters and legendary harp players. This evening of blues music not to be missed starts at 7:30. Wednesday, at Chico State's Laxon Auditorium, Presidio Brass takes the stage with music from movies old and new, adding a dose of wit and humor. This brassy quartet starts its concert at 7:30. It's the Chico Art Center's 60th anniversary of the Members Showcase, presenting a diverse array of art in a variety of media. The center's open 7 days a week from noon to four. 1078 Gallery helps celebrate the charming strangeness of our town with Keep Chico Weird 2016. Experience the visual art portion of this event at 1078 Gallery till 5:30 tomorrow. Theater on the Ridge in Paradise explores the themes of family and loss in its production, The Tin Woman. Curtain goes up at 7:30 tonight and tomorrow. The Acting Company in Yuba City presents an audience favorite, Forever Plaid. Four young singers killed on their way to a gig get one last chance to perform in the afterlife. Showtime is 8 o'clock tonight and tomorrow, with a Sunday matinee at 2. The Acting Company's Magic Theater has a mystery to solve with Sherlock Holmes and the Case of the Dog Napper. Tomorrow, you'll have two chances to catch this canine caper for kids, 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock. That's the calendar for this week. Thanks for listening. According to playwright Edward Albee, if Attila the Hun were alive today, he'd be a drama critic.
Talking today with Ken Hill, and he just founded a brand new theater company in Reading, Axiom Repertory Theater. So, Ken, what did you figure was the niche that you were filling with this new theater company?
There is theater going on up here, so what is missing? Well, what's missing is a professional theater company like Equity or Equity Waiver. While we are not that out of the gate, in the years to come, we intend to move forward and do contemporary works which are a challenge not only to us but also to our constituency. We can develop not only the finest talent that exists here, but we can also attract talent from perhaps around the world.
Well, amazing things can happen. I mean, look at Ashland, which is a nowhere town just over the border into Oregon. That's become a world-respected theater company. And
well, you know how that began. Back in the day, this guy, Bomer, wanted to stage a play, and the city father said, we'll let you do the Shakespearean play, but you have to agree to host a boxing match on that stage later in the evening, and the play was a huge hit, and the boxing match failed.
So you're not going to try any boxing matches on stage?
No. I don't think so. I think we'll just stick with the theater for now.
Okay, so your first play out of the gate with this new theater company is Waiting for Godot, right?
Well, you're 99% right. We actually did some research on it, and Samuel Beckett insists that it's called Waiting for Godot. So we've all retrained ourselves to say it that way. And I'm telling you, it wasn't easy for the first few weeks. Old habits die hard.
So what?
Yes, we're doing Waiting for Godot. Having the time of our lives with this production. We're going into rehearsal here in just about an hour again this week, making some amazing discoveries for this play. You know, when it was first written in the 50s, it became quickly known as the play that emptied theaters. People would leave at intermission just shaking their heads, not knowing what to make of it. But as Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, spoke recently about the production, they said Beckett had his finger on the pulse of a subversive style of comedy that we've only recently become aware of through, you know, the works of like Monty Python and Tim Burton and others.
Samuel Beckett, who wrote the play, he patterned those two central characters, Gogo and Dee Dee, after Laurel and Hardy.
We have a couple of bits that we use that are all the way back to the vaudeville era and unabashedly pay homage to those artists as well as others.
Well, I guess for those listening who might be unfamiliar with this play, although it's one of the most iconic plays of the 20th century, it has these two guys dressed in ragged clothes. They look like bums. And they're in a nowhere place, kind of a limbo, deserty place with one little tree. And they are waiting. Why are they waiting in this desolate place, and why can't they leave?
Well, that's a pretty good question. And I don't want to evade the answer, but I do want to answer it this way. Beckett, as you know, Tom, made a very firm point to not directly and overtly identify his symbols and metaphors. His concept was, if he tells you that this stands for that, and then you come in and watch the show, well, let's say you disagree with his statement that this stands for that. Well, then you're able to remove yourself and distance yourself from the play that's happening in front of you. So if you leave the metaphor and the symbol undefined in terms of specifics, then each person in the audience is able to interpret it based upon their point of view and their life and their history. I had a young boy, 10 years old last night, sitting in rehearsal that was just laughing, and his jaw was hanging open. And afterwards I said, "So what did you think?" And he goes, That's incredible. I said, "What do you think is going on?" And he gave me his interpretation, and I just was so proud. So why are they there? Why don't they leave? That's a very good question. And I think that's the one that Beckett wants us to talk about once the show is over. We've all seen it. We share our ideas, thoughts.
We can all agree that this is not a regular play. Not a regular comedy or a regular tragedy, as we're used to. You know, I tell my theater classes that the plot of a play has a stasis at the beginning, you know, the kind of settled-in pattern of things, and then something comes in, shakes it up, that starts the plot going. Well, this play is all stasis. Nothing ever gets the plot going, and they just kind of while away their time, you know, doing routines, very entertaining routines like a comedy team would, but it's all just kind of repetition and talking.
You know, it doesn't have a traditional beginning, middle, and end. You know, and I think it serves as a good foundation for our company. We'll kick off with Bardo, but we're going to come right back in June with Cabaret. And that's a very popular piece of entertainment and also very energetic and exciting. We'll take a summer off, and then we'll announce our next season. We're aiming towards a 5-show season. It's going to encompass a wide variety of works, both known and unknown. And one of my personal favorites, I know I'm going to worm my way in there somehow, if not this one after. I want to do Oedipus. I want to do Oedipus in an outdoor amphitheater.
So what venue are you using? Because you don't have a set physical theater, I think, for your company.
This first show, and it's very interesting how that all came about, will be performed at the Pilgrim Congregational Church in Reading in the sanctuary, which was designed by the great architect Frank Lloyd Wright. The pastor of that church, Annemir Korn, who suggested we do Gatto in her sanctuary, as a benefit to help raise money for local area homeless charities. And then Cabaret, we're going to do in Anderson. Their high school has a performing arts center, and we are going to convert that performing arts center into a Weimar Republic Cabaret and have cabaret seating and build a thrust stage that extends out into the audience. It's going to be exciting. And then, like I said, we'll take the summer off, and we'll examine the shows that we have coming up in the future, and we will find locations for them. We have others as well available to us. We're kind of moving in that direction for the first few shows, and eventually when we do find a home and we become static that way, I think we'll always have it as part of our mandate to bring theater out to people everywhere. It's theater should be available to everyone. The Greeks understood that. And that's part of who we are, the eclectic group of people that we have that are joining together to create Axiom. We all feel that way. So that's what we'll do.
A brand new theater company, the Axiom Repertory Theater. And when is Waiting for Godot premiering?
It'll be February 18th. We'll have 7 performances. People can find information at our Facebook page, Axiom Repertory Theater.
Well, thank you to Ken Hill for talking with us on Weekend Showcase.
Thank you.
Let's go.
We can't.
Why not?
We're waiting for Godot.
Waiting for Godot.
This is Dolores Mitchell, and today I'm talking with Cara Maria, whose exhibition Head Over Heels will be at Chico State's University Art Gallery, and it runs from February 1st to March 11th. Cara will be on campus Thursday, February 4th. She'll be talking in Calusa Hall, which is directly across from Trinity Hall. Cara, tell us about your exhibition.
The exhibition is a survey show which includes paintings of mine from the year 2000 to 2016.
Well, I'm looking now at the invitation, and it's really spectacular. I don't know whether to be frightened of what I'm looking at or to have a sense of celebration. There are huge bursts of energy in colors that range from green to red to pink to black. Some of them remind me of fireworks and are really beautiful, and others look like bomb explosions.
Actually, you got it just exactly right. That's sort of how I think of my work. There's a lot of cacophony in there, for sure, but there's also a lot of maybe exuberance also kind of mixed in there. Actually, that's part of how I came up with the title, Head Over Heels. So I think there's sort of like joy and pain in the same image.
And there's also a rhinoceros very realistically depicted walking into the scene with no trepidation whatsoever.
In the abstract images you're seeing, some of it is just complete abstraction, just things that I'm making up, but a lot of it is references to actual real things. And so what you see looking like streamers kind of going across the image, those are actually illustrations of wave patterns. One of them is a microwave pattern, which is what your cell phone emits and what the cell phone towers emit. And so if you could see what that looked like, it would look something like what's in the painting. The rhinoceros is just one example of this sort of I want to call it almost a trick or just a thing that I've been doing in my paintings for a long time, which is like interjecting almost the opposite of abstraction into the painting. So in this case, something that's just as real as I can make it look. It's sort of serving this like technical function in the painting, but then at the same time, I, in this series, wanted to choose animals that are endangered species so that I could sort of talk about climate change in a way that is indirect and not hitting you over the head with a particular statement, but just kind of leading you to think about another subject. I've had a lot of people come up to me and be really excited about certain animals that I chose because they're working on like a campaign to save the black rhinoceros, for example, which is what that is in the painting that you're talking about.
You'll be talking to a group of students. Is that a different kind of audience for you than you normally encounter?
People who are very different are like younger children when I've talked to maybe elementary school groups. And those are actually some of my favorite audience members because they have a lot to say and they're not shy about saying it and asking questions, whereas like college-age students or adults that come, everyone's a little reticent to, you know, speak out. So,
can you remember some of the comments from the young children?
Oh, yeah. I did this residency at Recology, which is the dump for San Francisco. Actually, it's a waste transfer site in San Francisco. It's where all the garbage from the city goes, and they have an artist-in-residence program. So you work there for 4 months, and you have to make artwork using the materials you find in the dump. And then part of the job of being there is you have these school groups and other groups that come through, but it's almost all elementary school kids that come through. They would come in, and they'd be like, I think you should put a butterfly in that one, or I think you should paint that corner red over there. This one needs more of that, or whatever. They just start like critiquing the work. It's really hilarious.
Well, can you tell us something about your trajectory going from childhood, your first interests in art, and then for a while you thought you were going to be a musician as a profession?
So going way, way back, I started dance classes when I was 4. And I was a pretty serious dancer up through middle school to the beginning of high school. And I ended up concentrating on ballet. So I had kind of an introduction, I would say, to music through that art form. And then I started playing the clarinet when I was in 4th grade. In middle school, I picked up saxophone and flute. And so in high school, I was basically a music student. So when I went to school, I started at a conservatory because I thought that's, you know, what I was going to do for a profession. And I had started writing music in high school, so I was doing that. And then I just kind of had one of those, I don't know exactly, I call it like a midlife crisis, even though I was only 18. It was sort of like this Pandora's box in my brain just opened, and all of a sudden I realized there's like all this other stuff in the world, and I'd been just so engaged with doing this one thing that I hadn't really thought that much about anything else. And so I had some trouble. I dropped out of music school and I switched to a regular university and then I went back to another music school. And I eventually ended up moving to California to go to UC Berkeley to try to finish a degree in something, but I wasn't sure what I wanted to study. And I had been looking at a lot of paintings because my study abroad was in Paris and I went to school in New York City for a while. So I just got really interested in painting and I decided to take a painting class among the other things that I was taking. And I just loved it so much. And I had this great teacher, David Simpson is his name, and he's a Bay Area minimalist painter. His class was just so wonderful and it really made me feel like, well, maybe this is something I can do. And so I just decided to do that.
I have across from me Kelly Lindner, who is the director of the University Art Gallery.
Once I came to Chico State and began my position at the University Art Gallery, it was like the idea just jumped out at me. It was like, now is the time that I can finally work with Cara. So our original discussions were really focusing on her most current work. And I was like, I don't want to just show the recent. You've had this amazing career over the past 15, 20 years. And I really would like the university audience to be able to see your progression and how your interest in abstraction, your interest in representation has evolved over that time. So that's where we ended up. And that's what is going to be on view. The type of work that Cara does is so energetic and dynamic. It's enjoyable to see. But she has really complex compositions. And Cara, I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about how you build these compositions and how you choose these incredibly, you know, color combinations that go into your paintings.
You have to have a real interest in color, probably, to pursue painting. You kind of use, like, lots and lots of color in every color in every painting. And then, well, I just thought, what would happen if I didn't use every color in every painting? So I started doing things with really limited palettes. And I also try to think about, you know, mixing neutral colors in with more powerful colors, because my tendency is towards the brighter colors. Like, red is my very, very favorite color. And so I can make these paintings that are all really, really loud, and there's nothing to work against that. So it's almost like you don't even notice how bright things are because everything is so bright. So kind of paying attention to that, and paying attention to dark colors versus light colors and transparent colors versus opaque and all that kind of stuff. What I do is put the painting on the floor and I get the canvas wet, and then I just sort of make stains with the acrylic paint watered down really thin. Once I like what's going on with that, I let it dry, and then I put varnish on top of that, and then I paint more with thicker paint on top of that. So there's this kind of process that creates depth into the painting, even if all the images are actually relatively flat looking. You do something, and then you look at it for a while, and then you, like, do something else, and then you look at it for a while, and you do something else until the painting feels like it's complete to you. So that's my method. And the little realist details usually go in towards the ending point of that process.
Cara, I have another thing I'd like you to talk about a little bit, which is that there's another series of paintings which has some very intense content, which has to do with the Afghanistan war and also images of women taken from pornography. And I'm just wondering if you can talk about, you know, your reasoning behind having that combination in paintings.
In my painting in general, there's been this idea of trying to combine different styles of painting, like I was talking about before, actually with the animals, so like interjecting this realism. And in terms of that, it's usually has some sort of political overtones to it. At the time, there were, you know, the series of wars in the Middle East that the U.S. was engaged in. I had all this war imagery mixed in with the abstraction, and it sort of started off with military equipment like airplanes. And then I was reading about military use of rape as a tactic of war. So I pursued that a little bit with some research, and then I was realizing there's this kind of connection between pornographic imagery and war imagery and the use of pornography in the military context, and it's this whole deep, interesting topic. And so I just thought, well, maybe I'll try, since I wanted to put some people in the work anyway, maybe those people should be nude, and maybe the nudes should come from pornographic sources. And so I just started jumbling all that stuff together in the work to see if it would be, you know, powerful or successful or make sense. That's how that came about. And again, it's a really similar idea. It's just that the imagery is so much more charged to see, you know, a nude woman or see people actually having intercourse in a painting as opposed to seeing, you know, just an animal standing there. But technically, it's kind of a similar thought and process that went behind it. But I realized that the effect of it is something quite different.
Well, thank you so much. And we look forward to your talk on February the 4th, 5 p.m. at Trinity Hall.
Thank you.
And that's Weekend Showcase for this week. We'll be back next Friday at 3 o'clock. As always, we encourage you to enjoy the arts in your community. For Weekend Showcase, I'm Tom Kinney. Weekend Showcase is a production of North State Public Radio.